We are back with the Comics Dispatch. My name is Andy.
And I'm Daniel.
And we, of course, are your source for weekly comic book news and stuff. You know, everything related to the comic book world that's transpired over the last 7 days. Or at least the cool stuff. Our special guest today is Joshua Fialkov, the writer of Tumor, Echoes. He also did a Marvel Girl one-shot, and he's got some other cool stuff coming up, mostly from the Big Two. So we'll be talking to him later in the show, so stay tuned for that. So how's it going, Daniel?
It's early.
It's 10 a.m.
It's still early.
I was up at 8, but I went to bed at 10 p.m., so...
Yeah, I don't remember what time I fell asleep, but I know it wasn't before 10 p.m. I was at work.
Oh, right. The hospital.
Yeah.
Saving lives and reading comics. You're a rebel.
Not in that order, though.
So what are you doing this Memorial Day weekend? Any plans?
Yeah, I plan on sleeping. It's the first day off I've had in months.
Amazing. I thought I was going to have a day off tomorrow, but I don't. Diamond makes us do FOCs still, so I have to go into the store, do our FOC order, make sure numbers are right, which they're not. So,
of course they're not.
Basically, for those people who don't know, in the retail business, an FOC is when we get to adjust the numbers of the big four companies of books we've ordered. So it would be Marvel, DC, Image, and Dark Horse. So, like, you know, say we ordered 30 copies of, I'm just throwing this out there, X-Men 15. But of those 30 in the last, you know, month, we've only sold 10. Well, we don't want 30 copies coming because we won't sell 20 of them. So we'll order maybe 12, you know. So that's the luxury of Diamond. But unfortunately, we can only do it for four companies. And we still have to go in on Monday, even though the rest of the world has it off. And by world, I mean country.
Yeah.
Did you do anything cool yet this weekend, or you just worked?
I just worked for the most part.
I'm sorry.
I'm not.
I went to the Long Beach Aquarium of the Pacific yesterday. That was cool.
Did you see the sea turts?
I did not. I only saw one sea turt. He was stashed in a corner of a giant, giant tank. I think he got lost and just was like, oh, I'm stuck against the wall. Life is over.
Poor turt.
But, no, it was cool. Saw some sharks, saw them eat. That was cool.
You saw them eat a sea turt?
Yeah, I did. No, they ate like a little block of meat. I don't know what it was. But the sort, you know those sawfish sharks that look so absurd? Yeah. I saw how it ate, though. It, like, guts it with its sword or with its saw, and then it, like, lets it drift to the bottom, and then it scarfs it up. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know. I bought a mug, a big oversized mug I'm drinking from right now, so I could have more coffee in one batch.
Cool.
It's delicious. Yeah. So that was exciting. You've been on tfury.com lately?
I have. Johnny Five's on there now, isn't he?
Yes. Well, by the time people listen to this, he won't be.
Oh. It's unfortunate. You guys need to go back in time and look at Sunday's t-shirt.
Can you explain it to us a little bit?
Johnny Five's from Short Circuit is reminiscing of the role of Jack Nicholas played in The Shining, busting through the door. Which, if you can picture what would happen in that scenario, is even more amazing.
Johnny Five is alive. You know, it's funny, if you look at the comments for that shirt, people are like, Wally, awesome. Oh, I love Wally. Oh, yeah. And it's like, no, it's not Wally. That's a Short Circuit.
Yeah, if I could be new.
Fury shirts lately.
There has been some good ones.
Oh? Like?
The Honey Badger.
I bought the Honey Badger. I did. If you don't know what the Honey Badger is, just Google it. It's a YouTube video. You'll laugh your ass off. Or you might be offended. I don't know. But I think it's funny. Did you buy any others?
No. I heard that you did, though.
I did. I bought the T-Rex sword fighting. because I saw it the day I read Super Dinosaur, which is awesome, by the way. Why didn't that comic exist when we were little boys? I always wanted a T-Rex for a buddy who would, like, fight for me and stuff.
I think it did exist, but nobody knew about it because it was ahead of its time.
What was it called when it existed?
T-Rex buddy that doesn't really have a following yet? I don't know.
Are you just making things up? You're just making things up.
Yeah, I'm making things up. I don't know. I remember the dino saucers, though. There was a comic for that.
Oh, right. There was, like, dinosaur stuff, but never, like, that style.
No, but there was dino saucers.
There was Dinotopia, but that never took off, because when you're a kid, Victorian-era-looking stuff is not cool.
No. Whoever decided that was a good idea really screwed the pooch on that.
Well, it is a good idea. I think it's cool, but it's just, you know, you're not appealing to kids.
Which is what they centered it around.
Right. But I still love the books. I bought most of them. I don't know if I read them, but I owned most of them at one point. But yeah, Super Dinosaur, awesome. I also got the Ninja Turtles one that came up recently. It was like, what was it? A slice of shell or something like that. And it was like a turtle shell shaped like a pizza with Raph Sy going through it. I had to get that one. So I did.
Awesome.
But, yeah. But it kind of reminded me of the Shreds Pizzeria one. But yeah. So tfury.com, you should check it out. They do cool stuff. They do shirts. All right, so let's talk some Flashpoint. Let's see. Flashpoint number 5 will be the only DC book shipping on August 31st. In time for it, DC is ensuring that all of their current runs on books, the stories wrap up before that date, which is causing some books to, like, double ship. Like Detective Comics, Wonder Woman. Basically, they're saying this issue, Flashpoint 5, is going to seriously change the face of DC. I know we've heard that a million times, but I don't know. I kind of believe it at this point, like the way Flashpoint has been going. I know Daniel and I, we kind of gave Flashpoint a bad rap a few episodes ago before it had come out and was just, you know, all these tie-ins, all these miniseries. We're like, what the hell, Flashpoint? This is, the more I hear about it, the more I don't like it. But for me personally, after reading Flashpoint 1, Flash, what was it, issue 12, I think, and the Booster Gold tie-ins, I mean, we're only talking 3 issues. But so far, I don't know, I've liked what I've read. What do you think?
I'm interested in some of the tie-ins still, but some of them still sound ridiculous. I mean, I'll have to read them just to read them. But, like, the Canterbury Cricket, unless they, like, kind of lead into, like, this badass that his name's, like, Canterbury Cricket, like some sort of British hero or something, I don't know.
What did you like about Flashpoint, number 1?
The bat suit.
Yeah, that was cool, right? Batman does
that,
look
that
awesome.
Bat suit kicks the regular universe's bat suit out of the water. I can't believe how awesome it looks.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of Batman Beyond-ish, but not really. It's way cooler. It's like, take everything you like about that color scheme with, you know, everything you want the main Batman suit to look like. And the logo's badass too, right?
Yeah. I also like the hero behind the bat suit.
Yeah, don't say who it is. I don't want to ruin that for anybody.
But
yeah, the guy who is wearing the cowl is not Bruce Wayne, and it's a fucking cool idea on who they have being Batman in the Flashpoint world.
I'm also looking forward to that tie-in as well. Azzarello's an amazing writer.
Oh yeah, and Eduardo Risso is just a fantastic artist as well.
I mean, like I said, there's a lot of tie-ins that are going to be interesting, but unlike Marvel, they're just bringing out new books, and they're getting their other books, temp writers on them.
That is true. What tie-ins are you looking forward to?
Dick Grayson, Dead Man tie-in, Oliver Queen, The Batman, Citizen Cold.
Cool. Because he's a good guy, right?
Yeah, he's playing a good guy.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be one of those things that's going to have a lasting impact.
I like the idea that they're having where, who is it? It's Aquaman, Wonder Woman, and who's the third one that are the bad guys?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I can't remember either. But regardless, these are the main villains. And essentially what's going on is they're essentially trying to take over the world. So it's up to the heroes and some villains too to kind of come together and bring down Wonder Woman, Aquaman, and damn it, who is the third one?
I don't know, but I really like the Shazam idea.
What's the Shazam idea?
Where each one of the kids has part of Shazam.
Oh, right. What are they called? The Secret Seven?
No, I thought that was something else. I thought they were just called Shazam.
Oh, okay. All right. Honestly, I don't remember. I read too many comics a week. I should have it in front of me, but I don't, because I don't buy it. I just read it.
Yeah. But that's an interesting concept. Each one of them has a different power.
What do you think about Flashpoint number 5 being the only DC book shipping August 31st?
Well, it worked for Blackest Night number 6, wasn't it?
Yes, that is true, but the only reason why that kind of worked was because literally that was the only comic, you know, in its entire, the only comic book that shipped that week. I mean, Marvel's still putting out books this week, you know, everybody else is. I mean, that was a skip week right after Christmas, I think, right before New Year's of last year.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't even remember what happened in Blackest Night number 6.
I think that was when all the characters got deputized with rings.
Okay. No, it's a cool idea. Will it work? I don't know. I mean, DC has to shake things up. Marvel's pulling away from them lately.
Yeah, in the press release I read, it was mentioned that that issue of Blackest Night was the highest-selling DC book of that month. So that's cool. But again, it was the only book that came out that week. I mean, the only comic period that came out that week. Plus, I think the timing with Christmas, people have extra money to spend. You know, they're going to pick up a comic. But from a retailer standpoint, this being the only DC book that shipped, that kind of sucks. That kind of sucks for us. Well, we're going to lose money on that.
It's going to be an easy sell if you got DC people.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, what about all those guys that, you know, that get like 10 DC books a week? You're talking a weekly bill of $35, and now it's cut down to 4. That's a lot of money. Yeah. That adds up.
It does add up, but, I mean, for a full reboot, I'll see what happens.
I mean, the only way I can see it working is if DC makes sure that the previous 4 issues are available, be it in second printings or whatever. I mean, they have to make sure that second printings are ready at that point, you know, that, or third printings or whatever run it's on, because if that book comes out and like issue 2 is still waiting on a second or third printing because it's sold out, then that's messed up because nobody's going to buy it. People are going to want to be like, oh, I'd rather read the full story. Oh, it's the last part of the story. I'll just wait for the trade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that really falls on DC's shoulders to make sure that they set up retailers for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they... Because is it just DC books? Are they going to release their Vertigo books?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to assume no. So yeah, I mean, as long as DC does that, I think there is a potential because you can be like, hey, this is the only book that's out. Read Flashpoint. Or, hey, did you check out these other tie-ins? Well, get Flashpoint 5 and which character interests you? Oh, Aquaman? Well, here's Emperor Aquaman. You know, all of them are out already. So I just, it's really up to DC. They gotta set up the retailers on this. How do you think it's gonna end?
Pretty much like, what was it, Final Crisis, where all the Earths kind of merge or whatever?
Yeah, me too. I think that, I mean, why not, right?
I find it weird that, you know, this has been happening, but this is the first we hear of it. How many times have we seen, like, all the other Earths?
I don't know. The Earth thing with DC kind of confuses me a little bit. I'm not going to call myself an expert on that. Marvel, it's simple. There are a gazillion universes. The main one is 616. That's the one that matters. Everything else, they're from wherever.
Yeah.
The DC Earth thing confuses the shit out of me. Like, the current Supergirl, she's from a different Earth, right?
Is she?
See, I don't know. Power Girl is, right?
Yeah, Power Girl is. I don't know about Supergirl.
She's the Supergirl of a different Earth, right? Who else is right now from a different Earth?
Wonder Woman, I think. That whole story's messed up. I don't even know what's going on with it.
I stopped reading it. I think the last issue I read was like 603.
Wasn't the Justice Society in general from a different Earth?
except for the older guys.
Like Green Lantern and Flash.
Right. Honestly, I don't know, though. I really don't know. That is the one thing about DC. If somebody could, some DC fan out there, or DC themselves, just come out with a book that just explains how the Earth works. Like, maybe make it a $3 one-shot. That's 20 pages. That gives a breakdown on what the hell is up with that, because I think a lot of fans are confused. And if you try and search it, it's still very confusing. I don't get it.
Like, just list, like, Earth 1, Earth 2, Earth 3.
Yeah.
And list who's from that Earth.
Yeah, or do it on your website or something if it's too big for a comic. You know, I mean, just tell us what the hell's going on, because it's confusing as fuck. But, all right, so Flashpoint, has it redeemed itself in your eyes so far? I mean, it's only two issues in. Speaking of, that Booster Gold issue was great. If you didn't read it, I highly recommend it. I don't like Booster Gold.
I haven't read it, but that was because we were sold out.
Yeah, I read it that on Tuesday, because we also sold out. It was all subs, and I wanted to read it, so it was very, very good. I was very surprised.
I hear that they're making Booster more of a hero.
So yeah.
That's good.
But okay, yeah, has it redeemed itself so far? Are you interested? Whereas before you were just like, Flashpoint.
I'm still only interested in a couple of the miniseries, but...
Okay, fair enough.
I'm at least giving it a shot.
Okay. I am excited for it. It has pulled a 180 on me. I was very impressed. I think if you take Batman out of the equation, I don't think it's that cool. But that Batman concept, that was a great last page for Flashpoint number one.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Let's talk some X-Men Schism. Did you read that three-page preview that ran on, was it CBR or Newsarama? I can't remember which one.
Yeah, on Newsarama.
Newsarama? Yeah, basically the preview was three pages. Showed some Sentinels getting their butts kicked by Psyche and Wolverine. Obviously, Jason Aaron is writing this. Who's also doing Wolverine. He's writing, let's see, he did Astonishing Spider-Man Wolverine, Scalped, of course, which is amazing. I like the art. Who's the artist?
You got me. I just kind of skimmed through the preview.
Daniel, I need you. You're my point man.
I didn't know that you didn't have the artist.
Well, regardless, what'd you think of this preview?
It was cool. I like the fact that Sykes taking Wolverine up in front of a committee. I guess he's a face now since he's an Avenger and everything too.
Yeah, again, we don't really know too much what's going on in Schism. This three-page preview didn't really reveal much. But it's supposed to be the rift between Psyche and Wolverine, so that should be interesting. But if the Sentinels are the big bads, which I doubt they are the way they cut through them, I mean, they really need to be able to shred Sentinels at this point. I don't want Sentinels being threats to the X-Men. I mean, come on. They're all, like, I mean, the X-Men have evolved past Sentinels being a threat to them. Right? I mean, come on. There are so many more mutants now, so many more Omega-powered mutants, so many more super-powered mutants, to the point where Sentinels just should not be a threat. So seeing Psyche and Wolverine just hack through those ones, it's how it should be. It should be like Power Rangers cutting through putties, or, you know, G.I. Joe blasting Cobra bots.
Okay, here's what I want. You were talking about a list of all the heroes from the Earth. I want a list of all the levels of the mutants.
What do you mean, levels?
Like, Omega level, Alpha level. I mean, because I know Wolverine and Cyclops aren't Omega level mutants, but...
Iceman is.
Iceman is. Emma Frost is. I'm assuming that they're going to bump Scarlet Witch up to that level.
Oh,
she did take their asses out.
I don't think that's going to happen. Reason being, I think it's up to a committee. Like, I don't think it's really been officially, like, determined who's what. Except for the few Omega levels.
This committee needs to get busy and tell us what the hell's up.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of mutants running around. You just said it. So let's get us some power levels. Let's see how the teams are actually composed.
I think the other problem with that is I think every writer writes these characters differently. Like, someone's going to write them stronger, and then another writer's going to write them weaker. Yeah, but you got Deadpool going up against Hulk. I didn't even read the issue. I just thumbed through it. Did he actually fight the Hulk?
No, he doesn't fight the Hulk. He's just trying to antagonize the Hulk. He drops like nukes and tries to blow him up with like a Patriot missile and stuff on him and
Okay,
everything.
yeah, you're talking about history with Wolverine versus the Hulk. He tried to kill him with his claws, and now Deadpool's dropping nukes on the Hulk? Come on.
But here's the thing, Hulk knows what Deadpool's wanting. That's the whole entirety of the issue.
What does he want?
He wants the Hulk to kill Deadpool. He's the only person that can do it.
Wait, Deadpool wants the Hulk to kill him?
Yeah.
Why?
Because Deadpool realizes without, like, he's not a good friend and everything, and nobody likes him, so he's like, well, you know what? I can't kill myself. There's no possible way I can kill myself.
So how
So
can
he goes
Hulk
in.
kill him?
Well, that's the thing, that it doesn't really lead into it, but Wolverine tells him that there's only one way that those two can die. And he's not going to help him with that.
The Muramasa Blade?
I don't know. But
Or what
Wolverine,
does he say is the only way they can die?
yeah, he just says there's only one way that can kill us, and I'm not going to help you with it, Wade. And
Oh,
then,
he doesn't say what it is?
no.
It's got to be the Muramasa Blade, because that's the only way Wolverine can die.
Well, this is, I don't know if that's it or all I know is that he goes and looks for the Hulk, and the Hulk has history with Deadpool. You know, when Deadpool's healing factor started crapping out, he had to get the Hulk's blood sample and everything. And even then, I mean, the Hulk and Deadpool don't really have that much bad blood between them.
All right. Well, X-Men Schism. Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to the variant covers.
Do they look cool?
It's that rap poster.
Which one?
The preview poster. Each cover is going to be a section of it.
Oh, a team? Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool. I like that. I'm looking forward to X-Men Civil War.
Me too. Although at the same time, like I was beginning to, it was really like growing on me how Wolverine respects Cyclops now. So I mean, the fact that there's going to be a rift, it's got to have to do with Uncanny X-Force and Wolverine going behind his back. I mean, it has to be. And Wolverine probably responding in kind with, "Hey, I can lead a team. I'm doing it already. You know, back off." But we'll see what happens. It starts soon. I want to say next month, right?
Yep. Is it next month? It could be July.
Yeah,
Not
well,
sure.
regardless, it's this summer, so keep your eye out for it. All right, let's do some quick hits, man.
All right.
Kick it off.
Okay. Recent speculation, given the Thor movie and the Infinity Gauntlet, has led to people talking about Thanos being a possible villain in the first Avengers movie. Not really sure if I feel comfortable having Thanos right off the start. So, everybody knows that Thanos is always searching for the Infinity Gauntlet. He's just recently become a major player again in the Marvel Universe. He had the, what, Thanos Imperative?
Yeah, and then he also had that Avengers storyline with the Infinity Gems, which was awesome.
But that wasn't Thanos.
He showed up, though. Oh, you're right, it was Doctor
It was
Strange.
Doctor Strange
You're
with the
right, you're
illusion.
right. Forgot about that.
But, I mean, Thanos is an amazing villain. A lot of people aren't really too familiar with him, though, because I don't know where the hell they were when the Infinity Gauntlet saga was going on. But we'll see. I like the idea of Loki just being the major villain in the first movie. Loki and maybe the Hulk.
I honestly, if Thanos is there, I think it'd be fucking cool. I think that opens up a lot of doors. I mean, yeah, it's starting out big, but you got to start out big, right?
But I'm thinking with them leading in with the spoiler alert, Cosmic Cube, you can't throw in Thanos with Cosmic Cube and the Infinity Gauntlet. I mean, maybe towards like the latter half of the movie, start leading into the second movie and the Infinity Gauntlet.
But that's such like, I think the reason maybe why they're doing it is because it is such a core Avengers story, right?
It is, but I mean, so is Loki manipulating everybody,
Yeah,
and
but we just had Loki. Why do we want more Loki?
because that's the first Avengers storyline.
Is it? Honestly, I don't remember.
Yeah, Loki's like manipulated everybody into doing all this other stuff, and it finally brings the team together, and that's when the Avengers start fighting.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Well, you know, it's ultimate though.
I don't know. Is it ultimate? I mean,
It's kind of both. It's its own thing.
it's kind of mixed up in a blender there.
Yeah.
But I do like Thanos. I think he's a great villain or anti-hero, if you guys haven't read Thanos Imperative. So, I don't know. We'll see.
All right, Zenoscope has announced, beginning with Myths and Legends, number 8, their second ongoing series alongside Grimm Fairy Tales. That in issue number 8, the storyline will feature the Little Mermaid. Of course, their own take on the Little Mermaid, which, if you see the preview image, brings one word to mind: boobs.
Lots of views.
But here's the solicit. The brand new Little Mermaid story arc begins. The search for the false bloods that may change the fate of the war on Earth continues. An orphan teen has spent her life alone and on the run with no home to call her own. But when the call of the ocean takes her on a journey abroad, she will find that destiny might just take her places she could never have imagined. The first issue of the new story arc, The Little Mermaid, begins here. Don't miss the hottest new series from Zenoscope.
I was looking at this, and the only thing that could pop into my head was the episode of South Park, the Maximum Boobage, the
I
heavy
can't say I
metal
saw it, though.
parody.
I didn't see it.
Oh, it's a heavy metal parody, so I recommend seeing it.
I'll probably check this out just because I thought Ariel was hot when I was growing up.
It's a terrible reason. Disney announces Disney Universe game. Wow. For those fans of Little Big Planet, but you just wanted to play as Nemo or Stitch, this game is all for you. It's a online multiplayer game, but it's not an MMO, I guess. Who knows? It could be considered an MMO now. The classifications have all just been skewered. But it's a platformer where you are dressed up as your favorite Disney characters and you progress through levels similar to the movies? I don't know. I don't remember there being a giant chasm in, like, Stitch, but who knows? Additional worlds, costumes, it's going to have all the DLC. There's no release date yet. Just keep a lookout for it. I don't know.
Is it so? Wait a second. It's a Little Big Planet, but just with these characters, or it's a whole different game?
It's a whole different game, but the way that these characters are, they look like the little sack boys, but they just have on these costumes, like something you would see at Disneyland. It's obviously geared towards the girl and the teenage crowd, younger audience. I don't.
All right. Well, that's cool. Are you gonna buy it?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm trying to keep this one PG since this is the Disney stuff.
All right, so Stuff of Legend, or The Stuff of Legend rather, from Third World Studios. The third volume, called A Jester's Tale, is coming out starting in July. It's going to be 4 issues, 24 pages each, and here's something that's different. It's going to be a regular sized comic now. Before it used to be that kind of storybook sized, so it won't be oversized. But this also affects the price. So instead of it being $4.25, or I think it was $4.99 for volume one, it's now $3.99 an issue. So it's cheaper. Plus, it's going to be monthly now instead of bi whenever. I think it was supposed to be bi-monthly, but it wasn't. You know how those indie books are. But this one was well worth the wait, even though it was late sometimes. So basically, the gist of the story is the Jester, who's the Jack in the Box character. He goes off on a mission he feels compelled to do, kind of thing, which is cool because this is the first time in the book where a main character is going to break away from the cast and just, you know, the story's going to focus solely on him. It's honestly, the Jester is my favorite character of the Stuff of Legend. I think he's cool. He wields these hatchets. He's a badass fighter. He has a love interest. I think he's the most well-balanced, well-rounded character. He's not just kind of one-sided, where, you know, actually, not a lot of the characters are one-sided, now that I think of it. But The Jester's just, he's just badass. I mean, in a word. He's Brian Smith, the co-writer of the Stuff of Legend. He's his favorite character as well. I think we're going to be having Brian Smith on the podcast sometime soon. Hint, hint. So yeah, Stuff of Legend, Volume 3. Look for it this July. Volumes 1 and 2 are already out. Pick them up. They're cheap. They're $13, and I think the other one's $17. So, have you read this, Daniel?
No, I haven't.
Oh, dude, read it. It's amazing.
I was actually waiting till like all of it came out, but
you don't have to wait. Really, it reads well, like in separate graphic novels.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely check it out. So, The Stuff of Legend, Volume 3, July.
Marvel HeroClix Captain America expansion has been sold out. Apparently, this is a growing enterprise. I haven't really played the game. I used to collect the little figures. It was kind of cool. But everybody had been waiting for the Captain America one. I know Andy was excited about the giant-size X-Men.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. It was an awesome set.
How much did you buy of it? Did you actually buy it?
No.
Or were you just kind of buying it off the kids as they were walking around?
Hey, kids. Wanna sell your clicks? No. No, I didn't buy any.
Were you trying to deal some clicks? Is that what it was?
No, I didn't buy any. I just like looking at them. The sculpts were awesome. I do own a few.
Awesome.
Like some customers would come in, they'd buy a pack, and they'd be like, "Oh, I have 5 of this character. Do you want it?" And I'd be like, "Hell yeah!" But no, I didn't buy any. I bought an Eagle Moss. That's enough for little figurines. I don't need little plastic doohickeys. But they were cool, and I did play the game.
I like the fact that the Captain America set will have like sub themes in it. Obviously, Red Skull and Bucky will be involved. Sharon Carter and her mom will probably be in it at some point. I forget her mom's
name. Oh, yeah, that World War II one-shot story, right?
Yeah. But the sub themes include the Serpent Society, S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, and recent fan favorites, the Secret Warriors.
That's cool.
That's awesome. I'm glad that I was kind of wondering where they fit into like a category in the Marvel Universe. So apparently they are included with Captain America.
I dig it. Awesome. Let's see. Arkea has signed with Publishers Group West, or PGW. PGW will begin distributing Arkea titles in the U.S. and Canada beginning June 20th of this year. For those of you who don't know Arkea, they publish some amazing books. Return of the Dapper Men, Mouse Guard, The Killer, Days Missing, amongst Tumor, of course, amongst many, many others. I love how their production quality of their books are, like all their hardcovers are just really, really sexy in a way. We brought on the new publisher of Arkea, I believe episode 3 of our podcast, Mike Kennedy. We interviewed him for a while, so check that out. But included in this partnership are two major media tie-in releases, the illustrated prose edition of The Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, which will come out in July, and an original graphic novel anthology to Relativity Media's Immortals in September. PJ Bickett, Arkea's CEO, said, quote, "We are forging powerful partnerships with industry leaders in all aspects of our business, underscoring Arkea's arrival as a substantial player within the publishing world. PGW will be a key partner in our success, and with their world-class distribution, they will allow Arkea to continue to expand our presence across the book trade, as well as in educational, library, and international markets," which is cool. Quote, PGW Vice President of Marketing and Business Development's Kevin Votel, "Arkea is a publisher to be reckoned with. They are consistently developing some of the most beautifully illustrated and wonderfully written titles across genres. In a short time, they've become a leading brand, and we're thrilled to be working with their list." I agree with everything said in all of that. Definitely in a short time, they've come out with a lot of books. I think they've been around for maybe 3 years, and their catalog is easily 20 books. So definitely check them out. We have a sweet Arkea archive on the site. Definitely give it a look. Want to expand on that Apes book, Dan?
Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes was written by author, artist, and digital producer Andrew E.C. Gaska. Not sure on how to say his last name.
I don't know. I butcher names.
And a dash, yeah, you do it worse than I do. Nahajubadaba. That obviously says Niles Frazier. And adapted from a story by Gaska, Rich Hanley, Christian Bernstein, and Eric Matthews. Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes recounts what happened between the scenes of the classic 1968 20th Century Fox film. Centering on the astronaut John Landon, chimpanzee scientists Dr. Milo and Dr. Galen, and guerrilla security chief Marcus. This book contains 30 full-color paintings and another 19 black-and-white illustrations.
Cool.
Including a cover by legendary artist Jim Steranko.
Very cool.
If you guys don't know what he's done, just search for Jim Steranko, and I guarantee you're going to see Raiders of the Last Ark, Bram Stoker's Dracula. You may even see Nick Fury's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Awesome.
But everybody, if you can't recall the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed for you.
Are you ashamed?
I'm ashamed for you. I am ashamed.
You know, one thing that was weird, that struck me weird about this, though, is Boom Studios is currently publishing that Planet of the Apes mini, which is actually really good. And I've, you know, tar and feather me, I don't think I've seen one Planet of the Apes movie all the way through except for the new one, which I hated. But I'm actually really enjoying this comic. So it's weird that Boom is publishing that comic, but Archaea now has the book. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. I don't know. Funny you should mention the comic. Did you see cover A on that?
Yeah, but what about it?
It looks like a zombie ape. If you, we all, at our store, we only got the cover B because of that.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't remember. Are you reading that series?
I've read the first issue.
I read one and two. I read two before we sold it. I think it's great. I'm into it.
I liked the first movie. After that, I kind of lost interest in it. Like, I couldn't get through, like, I think I was watching the fourth one. I was like, forget this.
Yeah, but another interesting thing is Boom is still publishing all those Disney kids books, yet Marvel owns the license. Like, what the hell is going on? How does this work? I don't know. I don't get it. But good things for Archaea. So definitely check out that stuff. I'm glad to see that they're moving up in the world, because I think Mal Kalo, their PR guy, he's been really good to us. He's a really cool dude. Most of the creators on their books have been awesome, one of which we'll be talking to really, really soon. Okay, DC has released their solicits for, what is it, August?
Yes, August. Yeah.
And that's how we knew the Flashpoint number 5 thing. But also included in this solicit list that has me creaming myself is... 100 Bullets Book 1 Hardcover, number 1. That is awesome. It's going to be oversized. It's $50, but it's 450-plus pages. Of course, 100 Bullets is the series written by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso, who are doing the Batman Flashpoint tie-in. But holy crap, this first volume is the first 19 issues of the series. It's about damn time 100 Bullets is available in hardcover form, and it's oversized. That's my only beef with the Preacher hardcovers. It's not oversized. What the hell? Why would they do that? But this one is... Have you read 100 Bullets, Daniel?
I've read, like, the first 5 issues of it.
How have you stopped? Why haven't you kept going?
Because I had other things I had to take care of.
Dude, read all 10 back to back. It's phenomenal.
But see, I've known that this was coming out for a good 3 months.
What? How?
It was released previously that they were doing a hardcover version.
I missed that. I don't know how I missed that.
So, it was just a matter of time before they actually put it in the solicitations. So, I was just like, I'll just wait. No point in reading an entire story, then buying a hardcover for it, if I just read it.
All right. Well, I missed that. So, it was exciting for me when I saw this in the list. Without a doubt. Also in this list is a Fables original graphic novel. At least I'm pretty sure it's original. It's called Fables Werewolves of the Heartland, and it's a hardcover. It's written by Bill Willingham, of course, and it features art by Jim Fern, Craig Hamilton, and Ray Snyder. Here's the little solicit blurb. Bigby Wolf takes center stage in what might be the most action-packed Fable story to date. Bigby embarks on a quest through the American heartland to find a new location for Fable Town. Okay, yeah, it's definitely new then. In his wanderings, Bigby stumbles across a small town named Story City that, amazingly enough, seems to be populated by werewolves. Who are they, and where did they come from? They aren't fables, but they sure aren't normal Mundies. They seem to already know and revere Bigby, but at the same time, they've captured and caged him. But why? Unraveling the many mysteries of the Story City may cost Bigby more than his life. It's 160 pages, it's full color, it's $23, comes out October 5th. That sounds awesome. I'm all about a Fables OGN. They already did it. They did 1001 Knights of Snowfall, which was great. I think this is great. I'm really looking forward to it. Are you reading Fables? Tell me you are.
Yeah, I'm reading Fables. I'm at the Great Fables crossover.
Oh, okay, so you're catching up.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm kind of skeptical about the Great Fables crossover from everybody, what they told me. That wasn't very well
done.
You should be.
It was easily the worst Fables storyline, but it does pick up after that, like really, really well.
Yeah, as soon as I get through this, I was actually going to start up Jack of Fables at the same time.
You should read Jack of Fables before the crossover, actually, in all honesty. It'll make more sense to you. Shit you not. Like, read the first, I think, 5 volumes of Jack of Fables, and then go back.
Well, I'll make sure I get on to that. I've liked the story so far.
Cool.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da.
So we are now joined by Joshua Fialkov. Super cool dude. He's written Tumor, Echoes. He had a Marvel Girl one-shot come out recently. He's also got some stuff coming out through DC, which we'll talk about in just a sec. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Most excellent. So tell us about Superman Batman 85. It starts your storyline, comes out June 8th. What can we expect?
Comes out June 8th. I didn't even know that. See? You have more information than I do about
that's
these
what
things.
I think that's what it said. Yeah, I think that's what the solicit info...
I'll take it. I'll believe you. yeah, so I'm writing a 3-issue arc of Superman Batman. What I wanted to do... You know, I've been doing... So this is my... I'm entering my 10th year in comics. I think in a couple months it will be my official 10 years. So... in those 10 years, every time I do mainstream work, you sort of get ham-boned into doing stuff for them, if you know what I mean. Like, you try and write, like, you want to write to match the work you were hired to do, right? So, like, you know, I wrote a Wolverine story, and I tried to make it really Wolverine-y. Like, I want it to be, like, Super Marvel Wolverine story. What I wanted to do with the Superman Batman was write like me. I've finally gotten to the point, I think, in my career where I'm kind of confident enough in my own voice. Where I just said, like, look, I know these characters, and I know the kind of stories I like to tell, and so this is one of those stories. It's a crime noir starring Superman and Batman. The idea is that a reporter washes up dead on the shore of Metropolis Bay, and Clark Kent, who you might have heard of, he's a reporter, also Superman, just so you know. I don't think I'm giving anything away. Tell me when I'm giving things away here. Yeah,
dude, you got to give us spoiler alerts, man. Come on.
And Clark Kent is assigned to follow up on this murder. And the thing is the body that washes up is a reporter from the Gotham Gazette who was working on a story about Batman's real identity.
Oh.
So Superman is Superman. See, that's what I do. Clark Kent is sent to Metropolis. Sent to Gotham to go and investigate and try and find out if the Batman is in fact a murderer. But here's the thing: Clark Kent knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and knows Batman also knows Batman is not a murderer. So what you get is Superman not being able to be Superman, because Superman in Gotham for me doesn't work. You know, Gotham is very much a place of, you know, of men. And women. There's also women. It's not a sexist place. But, you know, it's a place about, you know, the whole thing about Gotham is that, you know, Batman is sort of solving crime one guy at a time versus Superman, who is making the world spin backwards. And having Clark have to deal with humanity rather than, you know, kind of evil geniuses, I think, is just such a cool idea. And it's such a noir conceit, right? Because the core of noir is a man over his head in a situation where he has skills that he's kind of turned his back on, that he, you know, has kind of resolved never to use again. You know, so usually in a crime noir, it's a guy who's back from the war who never wants to kill again, who is then put in a situation where he once again has to decide if he can kill. With this, it's, you know, Superman having to be Clark and not use his powers. Having to solve it with his brain rather than with his brawn.
So are they mostly out of costume then?
Batman's in costume. And at the end of the day, I am still working for DC Comics writing Superman and Batman. So,
right.
Clark does become Superman multiple times throughout the course of the story. But sort of what, you know, like the big boss battle, so to speak, at the end of the arc, is not Superman versus anyone. It is Clark Kent. And I am immensely proud that I found a way to make, like, it's a fight that I always wanted to see, and you make it really interesting and really cool.
Can you tease us a little about who the big bad might be without giving
it away? That's the thing. Like, it's funny because the cover for the third one totally blows it. and it's my fault because it was one of those, like, hey, what do you want for the covers? And I was like this and like this and like this. Without really thinking it through. But there is actually, there's sort of like, there's a bad guy and then there's a mystery, you know? And like, so the bad guy and the mystery are almost, or might be separate from each other. So I don't want to, just in case people haven't seen the cover or don't put together the fact that cover art is reflective of what happens inside the book, I don't want to spoil it.
Usually it's not, so we'll just go with that, right?
There you go, exactly. Yeah, the cover's just random, just totally has nothing to do with anything.
It's a Superman and Batman, you know?
Yeah.
Hanging out. So
exactly.
Superman in Gotham City is an interesting concept. I don't think that happens too often. Does it happen in your book? And if so, like, do we see like the reactions of people like, holy crap, that's Superman. We're in Gotham.
I think of the three issues, there's maybe 8 pages of Superman not in Gotham. So like the entire book is him. And I think, you know, you get what we see, you know, you see he interacts with the cops a little bit. And then it's more just him kind of dealing with, you know, street crime. Like, again, like, it's using a sledgehammer when, you know, your shoe would do just fine.
Speaking of, like, how come Superman has never gone into Gotham and just pummeled the shit out of, like, Batman's rogue gallery? It would solve so many problems, right?
But it doesn't, though, because those characters, here's the thing. This is the thing about well-constructed characters. And Batman... and Superman are I would even go further and say really Batman. Like Batman is such a well-constructed character that each of those villains represent so much to his id, like to his character and like what's going on underneath the skin of that character, that anybody else beating those characters just doesn't work. You know, like they all, and you know, and like it's not, I mean, I'm not saying anything profound. You know, like the Joker has to be there because the Joker is the opposite of Batman. You know, so, but at the same time, you have the Riddler, right? And like the Riddler is Batman, is like a spoiled version of Batman. Like Batman is the master detective, and the Riddler is a master detective. But rather than do good with it, he shows off. You know, go ahead.
So are you using Bruce or Dick then?
Oh, it's set. It's set in like year 3 of Batman, so it's Bruce.
Okay. That's just what I wanted to get some clarification, because in recent issues, it was Dick, and then it kind of like switched over to where they were trying to lead it to be Bruce instead, but there was no like clarification on it, so.
Well, Batman, Superman, Batman, I always call it Batman, Superman, which just shows my bias. Superman, Batman is always, it's like an out of continuity, or has been an out of continuity book for a long time. So it's sort of like, and that's what's fun about it, right? Is that I got to do a year 3 story, like a young, kind of a young Bruce Wayne, and you know, and the whole story is built around the idea that there was once a time when Batman wasn't perfect.
You recently you brought up Riddler. What did you think about like that kind of character evolution they've been doing with him, on how he's now kind of toying with being a good guy and kind of going back and forth?
You know, like I like that they used him as, I like the idea of him being House, essentially, you know, that he's House. from the TV show House. I mean, not, I don't know what else.
Like
a
house?
Not a house, yeah, that would be weird. Not the casino. I don't mean he's the casino. I think that's actually a pretty sound way to take the character. So, and you know, again, like, he represents, all the characters represent those kind of different pieces of Batman. And that's when you really bring that stuff out, that's what works. You know, when you bring out how the tragedy of the characters' lives made them who they are in counterpoint to what made Batman, Batman. I think that's what actually makes that stuff really work.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, how you want this one to have your voice. And obviously, you know, when I think Josh Fialkov, I think Crime Fiction. I think Tumor. I think Echoes. I know you've been writing for 10 years, but honestly, that's, you know, where my mind goes. I just love those books so much. So if you, you know, that is you. Have you been reading detective comics at all?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I'm buddies with Scott, and he... It makes me jealous because he is just amazing. And that guy, yes. I mean, who, like, you know, comes into again, 10 years over here, that guy has been here for like 2 minutes. and he's amazing. That is bullshit. makes me angry. No, look, when, you know, that guy just breathes Batman, and he's doing stories. He's, again, like, he's, and honestly, to say that I'm trying to do stuff that's in my own voice, he's a lot of the reason, because I look at what he does. And I'm like, well, that guy doesn't give a shit. Like, he doesn't give a shit what a Batman comic should be by most people's perception. Instead, he's just writing great comics.
But there, I think there's a reason why that book is selling so well. I mean, because he's writing a story that fits the title, finally.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, and like, it's much easier to follow than all the other books. You don't need to be following 30, you know, the other 7 books or 8 books to understand what's going on. You know, it's a lot. I would argue, like, Detective has always kind of had that stuff. I don't know, Dave Lapham wrote kind of self-contained mystery book for a while, out in Detective. I think when was Paul Dini writing it for a while? Like, people have always kind of tried to do the detective-y stuff. I think that Scott is just, he's just knocking it out of the park. He's doing it better than anyone's done in a long, long time.
Yeah, and it's, like, the first real, like, Dick Grayson detective story.
Right. Well, yeah, and it works. Like, it really, like, it feels, it manages to feel like Batman while actually technically not being Batman.
Yeah.
Feat. Like, that's really damn impressive.
So I know you're, like, you know, you mentioned Superman, Batman's out of continuity for the most part. Are you hoping this kind of, like, you know, opens up some doors where you can tackle a, you know, a legit continuity Batman story?
Yeah, look, I actually, you know, I talk a lot about Batman, but I love Superman, too. Like, I think both... I grew up, I'm one of those rare kids, I think most kids grew up reading one or the other, either Marvel or DC, and I read pretty much both, and then I, at some point, got more, you know, obsessed with the 70s, the 60s, 70s, early, you know, kind of the early Silver Age stuff, and then in the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, I kind of fell in love with DC's Golden Age. And I read those comics, and, you know, the thing about the Golden Age stuff, I was reading the Golden Age stuff during a big pulp phase for me, when I was reading lots of pulp detective novels. And you realize how all that stuff was pulp novels for kids. You know, like, there's a lot of, especially, you know, you read Golden Age Sandman and Golden Age Batman, Golden Age Spectre, like, all that stuff. That, you know, they're telling these great grizzled crime stories that just happen to be guys in their underpants. specifically the Spectre, who my wife, I never thought about this, my wife pointed out to me. The Spectre is a pasty white man in underpants with a cloak. Like, what is that? And he is terrifying. Like, he is so, like, when, like, he is a terrifying character, except if you have no idea who he is, and you look at him, you're like, why is that pasty dude wearing a cloak and underpants?
Which is what your wife saw, right, when she saw
yes.
the character?
Yes, yes.
You're like, no, she's really, like, you're badass.
She's like, what homoerotic literature are you reading now, sweetheart? I'm like, well, look, he attacks people. With what? What exactly does he use to attack them? Terror and the wrath of God. It's in his underpants. I mean, that's the thing, I guess, right? Like, that's how scary he is. He doesn't need to be wearing pants. You know, he doesn't need a shirt. He just goes for it.
If you liked, like, all the, if you grew up, you know, reading all the old school DC, what do you think of the DC retroactive stories they're pumping out soon?
I think that's cool. I think I'm, you know, I like a lot of the guys who are doing it. I think that, and I like those stories. Like, there's something about that era when, and it's funny, right, because I write really intense, adult, mature crap. Hopefully not crap. Okay, stuff. I'll use stuff instead. But at the same time, you know, when we were growing up, right, you would read those comics. I think a lot about Ron Mars's Green Lantern run. And when you read it, the thing about that run, like, it is heavy, heavy. There's genocide. They murder, like, an entire city gets blown up. And then in Retribution, he goes and starts murdering people.
But it's for kids.
I read it when I was, you know, whatever, when I was 13 or 12 years old. And number one, I wanted to read it because it wasn't for kids, because it was adults. Number two, that's actually, like, it's a story about a guy, you know, thinks he has all the power in the world, realizes he doesn't, drives him crazy. Like, that's actually, like, that's a sophisticated piece of storytelling, right? But at the same time, like, my mom would look over my shoulder and she wouldn't be horrified. She'd be fine with it, you know? Like, she doesn't care. She's reading a comic book.
But no nudity.
But, well, you know, there is a girl stuffed in a refrigerator, which might have been much. But that was later, a little bit later on. But, you know, the point is that, like, now, you know, I have a daughter. I know you have a three-month-old over there.
Yes.
So, like, you know, when my kid's going to be, you know, 3 or 4 years old, like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to give her to read. Because you can't. You know, the books, everything's too adult.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the border with censorship. I mean, obviously, you know.
It's not censorship. You've read my books. Like, I'm in no way saying we need to control our. What I'm saying is that there's a way to deliver content that doesn't preclude new readers and young readers.
Well, let me ask you this then. Are you going to, I mean, you've covered a lot of bases, obviously. You know, you've covered iconic characters, your crime fiction stuff is very adult. Would you ever do a kid's book?
Oh, yeah, a kid's book. Like, I'm working on one. I'm working on a couple YA things right now. I want to do it. I love that stuff. But a lot of it is just like, well, look, this stuff doesn't exist in the form that I want it to. And, you know, I think the Marvel Adventures books that Paul Tobin does are mm-hmm. great. The Brave and the Bold book is great. Like, all those books are great. But here's the thing. I think you guys are all probably close to my age. I remember being a little kid and walking into the comic store, and on the shelf there was DC Superpowers, which was the book that was essentially the Super Friends comic that for some reason couldn't be called Super Friends. But you could tell, right? You could tell it was Super Friends. Right next to Justice League. Right? So same characters. Right? Same characters, just sitting on the shelf, same price. And I was not going to read that crappy DC Superpowers book.
Yeah, the choice is obvious, right?
Right, like, because it's not real. And, you know, as good as those stories are, as good as what, you know, there's no reason for Paul Tobin's Marvel Adventures Spider-Man not to just be Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know, I remember when I walked into the comic shop, I had X-Men Adventures. Do you remember that series?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they did a good job with that one. Like, that one was very much X-Men, you know? And then Batman the Animated Series was Batman Adventures.
Right.
So, I mean, everyone could relate to that. But, yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. Like, why would a kid today buy Tiny Titans when, you know, there's Justice League, right? I mean,
and there's a way to do mature content that isn't, you know, Dr. Light raping it. Raping Sue Dibney, you know, which I understand is a dated reference at this point, but still, like, that's, you know, it's one of those things where, like, we can do classy stuff. I think you can give, and Scott Snyder's Detective is grotesque, right? Like, there's grotesque stuff going on in it, but I would feel comfortable letting a kid, like a 10-year-old, 12-year-old read that book, no problem.
Because that would get them into comics, though, I think, like, if they were to read that book. Yeah.
Look, I started reading comics. My favorite comic books that I read as a child were Omaha the Cat Dancer. You guys remember that book?
Wasn't that very rated X?
There are so many cat cocks in that book, you would have no idea. There's just cat dick after cat dick after cat dick. You know, it's like, look, I love that. I, honest to God, like, loved it. That and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Just loved them to death. And, you know, So, you know, we're gonna read what we're, you know, kids are gonna read what they're gonna read. I guess what I'm saying is, like, we wanna create content that not only gets the kids excited and gets the current readers excited, but also has parents feeling like, it's okay to let my kid read this thing.
You mentioned Ninja Turtles, so now I have to go down that road.
And hold on, before we go there, and doesn't require reading 700 other books to understand what it is.
This, what you guys are talking about, kind of reminds me of like the Looney Tunes style stuff. If you watch Looney Tunes as an adult, it's even funnier.
So. Yeah, and that's hard. It's really hard to do. I don't know if you guys saw. Did you guys see Rango?
No.
No, I've not.
Okay, it's Rango. Yeah. Okay. Is amazing because it does something that very few things manage to do. You watch a Pixar movie, right? They're wonderful. Love them to death. Best things ever. But the thing about a Pixar movie is that if you're 5 years old, if you're 50 years old, if you're 90 years old, you get the same experience watching that movie, right? Like you crying up, everybody cries after the first 10 minutes up. It's just how it works, you know? And then you have a rip-roaring good time watching the rest of the movie. But there's no subtext. There's no, like, there's nothing in it that is any different depending on your generational understanding of the world. What Rango is Rango is literally two completely separate movies simultaneously. For the kids, it's this wacky talking animal adventure movie. Like swashbuckling adventure movie with talking animals. For an adult, it's this really sophisticated satire and parody of the Western genre and the adventure genre.
Really?
And it is, and it's the reactions, kids sit there and watch it enraptured with it. Just like, oh man, what's happening? You know, like watching like Star Wars when we were kids. As an adult, it is hysterical. Like, you just spend the whole time laughing because it's so funny. And it really, like, it's genuinely expertly done. Like, it's really fantastically done. And that's, I think Doctor Who is kind of the same thing. I think about Doctor Who like that. Like, the thing with the relaunch of Doctor Who is, like, if you've never seen a Doctor Who episode before, you can watch it and understand it, and you have one experience. If you're a longtime fan and you watch it, you get something else. Like, you get kind of added content. Almost, without realizing.
Doctor Who is fantastic. It is absolutely fantastic.
Anyway, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Go ahead.
Did you hear about the reboot they're doing with
IDW? I did, and immediately emailed them to say like, "Oh, I would do that. Let me know. I would do that."
It's so funny. On our first show, we brought on artist Dave Raposa. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He does a lot of fantasy art, and we talked about turtles because he did these amazing portraits. Dude, they look fucking sick. Just Google Dave Raposa turtles art and take a look at them. I think you will cream your pants because they're amazing.
I will.
But everyone I've talked to is like, yeah, I emailed IDW right away. I want to do a turtle story.
We're all the right age. Like. The bulk of creators right now are kind of in their early to mid thirties, and we were the right age for it.
So I mean,
right in our sweet spot.
What do you think about it? I mean, they're introducing a new villain. I think they nailed the look. What are your thoughts?
I haven't seen. I've actually been kind of shielding myself from it because I'd rather just. I just want to read it and enjoy it.
Oh, okay, all right. Then we won't dwell too much on it then.
But I think that. I'm happy that there's going to be new stuff. I kept reading it. It's one of the books that I kind of continued with. And the Mirage stuff that Laird was doing, I think was great. Like, I hope they keep collecting it all. Because what happened, I don't know if you guys were reading that. It ended, like 3 or 4 years ago. But the turtles aged. So everybody kept getting older. It was sort of done, not almost in real time. So they were no longer teenagers anymore. So they were adults and they all sort of went their separate ways and it was cool. It was
I missed all that stuff, but thank God IDW is going to be reprinting it finally.
Oh, they're reprinting all of it. Good.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to take time obviously, but I mean, it's about time. Like all that stuff is impossible to find.
Yeah. It was always really difficult.
So let me ask you this. I have to ask this. I ask this with every Turtles fan. Did you read the Ninja Turtles Adventure series from Archie?
I did. I wasn't crazy about it, though. Like, my very first comic ever was Mirage Volume 1, Issue Number 6, I think. I just clearly remember seeing it on the shelf and being like, I don't know what this is, but I am in love. and then, you know, I then, it was within months, the the cartoon started, and I was so confused. I was like, how did... I like this so much, they made me a cartoon? Oh, that is awesome. I am the chosen one, I thought to myself.
Did you... you like the cartoon, obviously, right? Even though it's dramatically different from the comic?
Yeah.
Then how come you didn't like Ninja Turtles Adventures?
Because, again, it felt fake. It's crazy. Like, it's that same thing, right? Like, it just felt... It didn't feel like the real thing. Knowing that there is a real Ninja Turtles, knowing that there was a real Ninja Turtles comic and that I was reading it, made the RG one feel fake. Also, they started off by like adapting the episodes of the show, and
it was only the first three issues, though. Then it took its own identity. But it was off to the races.
That's true.
They did the Future Turtles, Ninjara, awesome character.
Yeah, I remember all that stuff. No, I did read it. I think I read it. I just wasn't crazy about it. Like, I don't have the fun memories of it that I have of the Mirage stuff.
Did you read Tales of the TMNT? Which is basically...
Yeah?
What'd you think?
Yeah. Same thing. Liked it. Great.
Cool.
No, it's like I said, that like I that was a simpler time. It was so nice then. When, you know, you didn't know good from bad. You just knew that it came out every week.
So, Josh, can you tease us with a potential Marvel project?
I can't. I do have something that I just turned in script for that should come out. That's a Fear Itself. It's a Fear Itself thing, which would make you think that it'd been announced, but it actually hasn't yet. So yeah, I have something. I don't know when it's coming out. I have more DC stuff, but you know, same thing. Can't really talk about it. I know it's what happens. I have an Image book. I can talk about that because it's mine.
Yeah. Talk about it.
Well, I can't really talk about it because it hasn't been announced yet. Oh, it should happen. No, I'm doing an Image book. It's with an artist by the name of Brent Peoples, being inked by a gentleman by the name of Matthew Waite. And we are doing it. It's going to launch, I think, in October. And it is me. The idea. So here's the thing. I had this long conversation at one point with an editor buddy of mine. And the conversation was... you know, so look, I've been doing this a long time, and why, you know, what's the trick? Like, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong? Because I do my books, and I get a really great response. People really like, the people who read my books, few though they may be, respond really, really positively and really, really vocally to them. But the trick, you know, the thing for me has been like, well, how do I kind of overcome the small part, the part that there's so few of them? And, you know, the thing was like, well, look, we'll just do a superhero book. I'm like, I don't know. These creator of superhero books are, you know. I mean, Irredeemable's great. That's about it.
Yeah.
That's where it stops, you know? Like,
I was like, what other ones are there?
I mean, like, it's really hard to do and really hard to do well. It's really hard to do and even harder to do well. But I like doing Sisyphean challenges, and so I thought to myself, I can do this. So I sat down and started thinking about what superheroes mean to me, like what they mean in our culture, like where they sit, and the book sort of evolved from there. Like it, what it's really about is it's about the kind of the power structure of our world and how America over the past, you know, 20 years has kind of turned into this like angry teenager where we just sort of, we decide what's going on with the rest of the world and everyone else either bows to us or we throw a tantrum, you know? And so I went from there and kind of drew out this, you know, a character who represents that to me. Who represents, you know, that mentality, and came up with the book. It's called The Last of the Greats. I can't talk too much. I really, honestly can't talk too much about it. But like the idea is that the world is coming to an end, and there's one guy, there's this one super being who can save us, except for one thing, which is he really fucking hates us. He just despises us.
Have you ever read Class War?
Yes. Yeah, there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that in there. Like, you know, like it's sort of like I'm not, I've gotten to that point where it's like, look, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm just trying to make my wheel.
Yeah, of course.
You know, like I'm trying to do, because I, you know, look, Supreme and like there's all that stuff is out there. And everybody has done their take on this stuff. I mean, even now, look, I've worked so much for Top Cow, and that's Top Cow is, and that's what the Top Cow universe is. That's what, you know, it's what the Wildstorm universe is. Like, all that stuff is, how do we do Superman and Batman different? You know? And for me, it was like, well, you know, I don't necessarily believe in a world. I don't think that we could have a world with these super beings walking around and us being content. Like, I just don't, like, there's no possible way that a dude can walk through the air, shoot lasers from his eyes, and make the world spin backwards, and we're all like, woohoo, that guy rules!
Kind of like the boys concept, then, in that sense. Like,
sort of. Again, like, and it's that same thing. I think, you know, the difference for me, again, is that I don't think we would ever... The thought that our world would turn into that, where there is hundreds of these guys or even dozens of these things walking around, like, the world would just explode. We would just cave in. There would be nothing. Society would completely break down. Like, we would be done.
So maybe the Friends of Humanity are onto something then, huh?
There you go. See?
So is it like a mini series, or do you have plans for this to be an ongoing?
Ongoing. God, please. Hopefully it's going to be an ongoing, you know, sales permitting. And, you know, we feel really good about it. We're going to have at least the first three will be done by the time the first one solicits. You know, so like we're going to give it our all. But, you know, the market terrible right now. So,
well, I don't know, man. I think, you know, Image has done a really good job this last year and a half of, you know, an indie revolution. Like, holy shit. Like, I mean, from a sales standpoint, sure. I mean, the numbers aren't as big as the big two, obviously. But, I mean, there's definitely a geared interest with new readers that I notice on the retail end. When people come in, like, I want to read comics, I show them the indie shelf, you know?
And luckily, the sales on Marvel and DC books are coming down so low now that they're really not that far. Like, we're actually, independent comics are doing, you know, we're not doing that much better, but everyone else is doing that much worse. And so I suppose at least it's equalizing.
Well, let me ask you, why did you go with the Top Cow imprint? Image for this one, which I guess is Top Cow.
Oh, it's the ownership stuff. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, comics... What people call creator-owned comics are not creator-owned comics. You know, companies who claim to be creator-owned and then take 50% of your rights, which is almost all of them, honestly. It's not even about. I mean, Vertigo, literally everybody. Vertigo, Dark Horse, Archaea, Top Cow, everybody. Like, there's nobody. IDW, I mean, there's literally no publisher who doesn't take a huge chunk of your rights. Oni is kind of an exception. I'm doing a book at Oni as well, actually. But everybody takes a huge chunk of your rights. And sometimes it's worth it. You know, I do my book at Top Cow, and Top Cow, you know, owns a piece of the book. But they also made sure that Rasan and I, you know, were financially able to actually make the book. They really provided support to allow us to do the book, by which I mean paychecks, by the way.
Yeah, they
were oblique. but at the same, and you know, and again, like, my relationship with Top Cow is really good. I've had a really great experience with them. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but I'm giving up all my rights. And if I can afford to work for free, and if I can find artists who are willing to work for free, we're better off. Like, we're just better off being able to own it and have it be all ours. And you know, and sometimes that isn't the reality. The reality is that most artists need to get paid because it's a shitty, shitty life. And it's a lot of work for a long time before you see any money off an Image book. But being able to control my own destiny means a lot to me at this point. I've had really, really awful experiences in the past. And I'm sort of like, if there wasn't an Image, if there wasn't a way for me to be doing books at Image, I would not be doing most of my books.
Really?
Because it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense to get treated the way you get treated and to give up that much and get so little in return. You know, it's just, and that's the reality of independent comics, is that you don't get a lot for what you give.
I mean, without naming company names, I mean, I've talked to a few creators who do their own indie stuff, and they're like, you know, a lot of it, I'm breaking my back, and the company doesn't even, you know, publicize my book very well. What is your experience with that? Like, you know?
I mean, I don't, like, honestly, here's the thing. The honest to God truth is that books sell nothing, right? Like, books just don't sell. You don't make a lot of money from the publishing. And, you know, I want my books to sell well. I want people to read my books. Where I make money is on the movie stuff, right? So if you look at it, again, just look at the economics, which is, so you're optioning your book. And let's say you get, like, a nice $20,000 option. If you're splitting it 50-50 with the publisher, okay, so now you just got 10 grand. Okay, that's great, but then you're also splitting it 50-50 with your artist, right? So now you just got 5 grand. So now you just worked 2 years on a book and made $5,000.
Yeah.
What is that?
Nothing.
You know, and yes, the publisher did something. The publisher was involved. The publisher was there. But at the end of the day, the publisher was working on 30 books. The publisher is making money off the, like, they're making all their money back because they make their money back before you ever see a dime. And you're sort of stuck, like, well, I did all the work. I'm like, you're trading on my name. And that's the myth, is everybody thinks, like, all these publishers, like, it's the publisher that matters. Like, do you know, if you go into the proper book world, unless you're an agent or an author, and even authors, you don't know who published stuff. You don't buy a book. You're like, oh, man, Random House put out this new book. I got to go read it. That doesn't happen. That's not real. Like, the value of a publisher is their books. You know, if you took away what we did, the publishers have zero value. And now that digital's here, and I apologize to you as a retailer, but now that digital's here, like, what am I doing? What do I need you for? Like, what do I need? Not you. Sorry. What do I need you for, publishers? You know, like, what am I getting? Like, I'm giving you half of my rights for you to screw up my print book? I don't want that. It's not good for anybody.
No need to apologize, because, I mean, if it's done right, it actually will help us.
Yeah, exactly.
But it has to be done right. I mean, they need to solicit digital comics to non-comic readers. I really think that's kind of, like, the key. Like, people who are coming into the shops already, like, why are they marketing towards them? Like, we got to bring new people in, you know, market towards kids more with digital comics, get them into it. You know, every kid owns an iPhone. Every kid can download a comic for $1. You know, they like it, then they'll come into the store and actually buy the book, hopefully.
Right.
That's kind of like the gist, right?
And again, you know, like that follows what I was saying earlier, which is, you know, if you go to, you know, the week that Iron Man came out, the week that Batman came out, the week that Wolverine came out, the week that any of those big movies came out, if you were to walk into a comic store or go on the app and try to download the newest issue of the titular book, the book that is named after the character whose movie you're going to see, Iron Man, you would have gotten Iron Man as the Secretary of Defense.
Ooh.
Or Tony Stark, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever it was, or Director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So shit.
You would have gotten Dick Grayson as Batman, right? Who's not Batman, right? Because that's not Batman. We just saw a movie, and Dick Grayson, who's that? That guy's not even in the movie. I don't know who that guy is. With Wolverine, you would have gotten a guy who is 70 years old and doesn't have claws and has a shaved head. Because you had an old man. So it's like, guys, like, look, you guys got to do what you got to do. And I understand that the market is what the market is. And you have to put out books that sell in this market. But the fact is, like, if you just put out books that are like the movies, then people will buy the books and be like, hey, this is just like the thing I really liked.
And yeah, they got to do it right?
Like, maybe they will keep reading it then. Maybe they will, you know, stay on board and keep doing it. And I think, like, it's a weird, like, and I don't think every book has to be, I don't think that every Batman book has to be like the movie, but one of them, just one of them, make it like the movie.
Yeah.
And make, you know, I mean, like, making, like, you look at the, like, the Earth 1 Superman and Batman books. First off, like, who knows what Earth 1 is? You know what I mean? Like, what person who's not already reading comics is like, oh, Earth 1 Superman, I'm into that. That sounds like something I want to read. Like, what? Just call it Superman. Just super done. I actually think, like, I think it's the weirdest thing. I'm just ranting today. I'm sorry, guys.
No, it's great.
The weirdest thing in the world, right? Like, have you, you know, we sit here. And Batman Brave and the Bold is on. And on this episode of Batman Brave and the Bold, Batman gets turned into a vampire, and he's on he's in the Watchtower, and in the Watchtower is Red Tornado and Martian Manhunter and all these characters, right? And then that show ends, and then Young Justice starts, and in Young Justice is Martian Manhunter and Red Tornado and Batman. And nobody is like, well, what the fuck? They were just up in space. I don't understand. Nobody does that. Like, we get it. We just understand. No, self-contained. It's its own thing. You know, like, there's no, what's the confusion? There's no, like, there's no problem. Like, just make a goddamn movie version and be happy.
Yeah, I mean,
we can handle, we as a culture understand, oh, this is different. That in this one, in the one cartoon, Dick Grayson is all grown up. And in this other one, he is still a teenager. In one, he grew up what is clearly in the 80s. And in the other, he is growing up now. I understand. Done. Move on.
Yeah, I mean, the companies need to get their shit together with that, without a doubt. I mean, we were just talking about the Earth thing, like how confusing that is for new people. You know, also, you know, what do you think of DC just shipping one book? Like, you think that's good for them in August? Like, August 31st, they're putting out one comic. That's it.
I can't, no comment.
Okay.
I can't say
fair no enough. Comment.
No,
fair
look, enough. I think it's a strategy. I'll put it that way. I think that they are, they're doing something. And it'll make, you know, in theory, everything, I'm hoping everything will make sense.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they're, you know, I'm like, I don't even, like, it's not even that. It's not, I don't think they're not shipping one book all month. They're shipping one book that week, right?
That week, that yeah. August 31st, I think, yeah.
Well, look, who cares about August 30th? That is a stupid day, clearly. It's a waste, that day. No, I mean, you know, look, I applaud both companies for trying. Like, they really are. I genuinely think that they're fight. I think, like, the heroic age thing Marvel did was a really, pardon it, a heroic attempt to try and, like, reface themselves. I think what DC is doing right now with you know, trying to kind of reface their books, like all that stuff, I think is really, you know, I think it's really good for the industry. I want them to do the one thing, that one simple thing, which is just make a book that's like the movie. So again, Green Lantern, right? Like Green Lantern, the movie comes out, everyone's going to go crazy for it. But then you go and read the books and like the books, again, nothing like the movie.
Well, I think they're tying that in with Secret Origin. I think that's kind of what they've been doing. Like, they've been telling people, yeah, if you like the movie, read the Secret Origin trade, which took place right after Sinestro Corps War.
Right.
I'm pretty sure.
More, though. We want to
hook them. But Josh, I can tell you this, you know, coming from the retail standpoint, right. It's really, really sad that the movies do jack shit for us. I've had maybe 5 customers come in and been like, hey, yeah, so the Thor movie came out. What Thor book should I read? 5 people tops, no more right. than that. I mean, and Watchmen, here's a great stat for you. Watchmen, before the movie came out, we sold 100 copies of the trade that month of March. You know how many we've sold since the movie has come out?
Oh, don't say that. That's sad. How many?
Less than 20.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This is the unfortunate thing, is that those books should be sold in bookstores and on Amazon. Like those gateway books... The books that are actually going to get people reading stuff, because Watchmen clearly sold a shit ton of copies after the movie. Like, it did. Like, it's still, you know, the
highest. But not to comic fans.
Well, that's good. That's what we want. I don't want, like, who hasn't read Watchmen?
True, true.
What comic fan worth their weight hasn't read Watchmen?
Fair enough.
My wife has read Watchmen, for God's sake. Come on.
Valid point.
Like, you know what I mean? So, like, that's the thing. Is like, no, I don't, like, I want our little thing... The stat I always use, if a TV show, if a primetime network TV show had as many viewers as the highest-selling comic book in the world, right, or in America, North America, I guess, it would be canceled before the commercial break. Like, it would just go to an infomercial because that would be a better use of time. I mean, because that's, if like, 125,000 people, and that's being generous... 125,000 in TV ratings, that's like a point, I think it's a 0.8 technically.
So it sucks.
It's nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even less than, I think it's a point, I take it back, I think it's like a 0.1. I mean, it's like nothing. It's literally nothing. Like a cable show, if a cable show got that, the show would be canceled. It's really, like, that's bad. It's bad that we have brands that generate billions of dollars and we can't figure out how to do it. And, you know, you look at, you know, I think about Top Cow and Wanted a lot. Because, number one, the movie of Wanted is great. I think the book, not only is the book radically different, but I don't think the book is that good. But when the movie came out, that book sold a shit ton.
It did.
It sold so many copies. And it's like, all right, well, look, that is, there you go. Right? Like, that is easy.
Yeah, I just
think. Let's do this. Let's stop selling all the trades. All the trades we should stop selling in bookstores. They should just be available in comic shops. And let's only have the trades that are exactly like the movies. Let's only have the gateway trades. So instead of walking in and seeing a comic section that is stuffed with crap that is unreadable and confusing and doesn't have numbers on it, so I don't even know what the hell I'm reading or what order I'm supposed to start in, and let's just streamline it. Let's just have a narrow field just to get people in. Like that, you know, like that, like let's just get people, like we need to shepherd people. And the unfortunate truth is that, you know, LA, we're spoiled out here, man. Like we have comics, there are 1, 2, 4, 5. I have 7 comic shops within a 5-minute drive of my house. And I live in the valley. You know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it is the job of the retailer.
That, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the job of the retailer, too, to kind of up their game. And, you know, Ed, the owner of our store, Collector's Paradise, I mean, he said this. He's very vocal about it. He's like, retailers need to up their game. They need to know their product. You know, they need to, you know, cater to their customers. And unfortunately, we're still kind of stuck, you know, in the 19 whatever, pick your decade with, you know, the comic book guy, comic shop owner. You know, like you said, in LA, we're spoiled. I don't think that's the case with a lot of stores out here. But, I mean, go anywhere else in the country. I mean, you talk to people, you know, talk to comic fans. It's like, oh, my store didn't even get, you know, name your indie book. Right. You know what I mean? But it's the job of the retailer, but it's also the job of the publisher, I think, to not also dick the retailer over. I mean, I don't know why this doesn't happen. Why isn't there a way for, you know, the publishers to sell online comics through a retailer? In the sense like, hey, you know, you sell your online subscription through us, you know? Because you don't want to, because you don't want, like you, how you're saying, you know, publishers kind of give a fuck you with rights, you know, to the creators. Mm-hmm. At the same time, like, this is kind of opening the door, if done incorrectly, for publishers to give the fuck you to us, you know, the retailer who's been essentially keeping their product alive.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think what's going to happen is that stores like yours and, you know, like the way Ed runs his store is how the shops that survive are going to be, which is you're selling, you know, 70-80% of your stock that you sell is going to be trades.
Yes.
The thing with the singles is that the pricing on singles is just stupid. It doesn't make any sense, right? Because it's so expensive. They're too expensive to be low-cost impulse buys because we're cresting $5. Like, we're getting the $5. And you don't get $5 worth of content in that thing, right?
No.
So it's for the collectors. Right. It's in digital, right? Digital, like, you can't price stuff. At $5, you'll sell nothing. So you have to price everything at $1.99. Like, and even I think $1.99 is too high. I think everything should be 99 cents. And at 99 cents, how am I cutting you in? Because I have to pay for creative. I have to pay, like, I'm not expensive, but I'm expensive. You know, when you're spending, when Marvel and DC are spending, you know, probably around 15K, like low end 15K on a book, not including, like, that's just, you know, creative costs. That's just actually getting the book done, not including the salary of your editor and your marketing people and your PR people. So, like, you know, if you're selling it for 99 cents and Apple is taking their 35%, so you're making 65 cents per copy. So just to cover your basic, most basic, you know, your most basic cost, you have to sell 30,000 copies, and most books don't sell 30,000 copies print. Yeah. And I guarantee you they don't sell 30,000 copies digital. You know, so it's just like the market is, and I don't have this, I wish I had the solution. I wish I could tell you, like, and here's what we're gonna do. But the market is really broken. And it terrifies me because I have a kid, man. I want it. This is what I do for a living. Like, I don't do this. I do this because I can't do anything else. I do this because it's what I'm good at, you know? Like, this is what I want to do. I don't want to go work in animation or work, you know, I've done all that stuff. I've worked, you know, I've I've worked in film and TV. I've worked, you know, in animation. I've worked in everything. Worked in radio. I've done everything. And this is what I'm good at. This is what I love. This is what I'm passionate about. And I don't want to have to go. But the market being what it is, like, they're sort of like opening the door and pushing you through it.
Don't you think there's something to be said in the sense that, yes, the economy is shitty, but at the same time, I mean, while numbers may be going down, I mean, comics are still selling, right?
I know. What do you mean? I mean, literally, are there people actually walking into stores and buying comic books? Yes. But but like, this is, I mean, I tell this story and it's sort of unfair, but, you know, we got, I'll never forget my first book, Elk's Run. We were self-publishing the issues through my old company. The day we got our orders, I think for issue 2, was the same day that we got an A in Entertainment Weekly. So I get that we got a phone call from all these people. Oh my God, you're in Entertainment Weekly. Oh geez, oh it's so exciting. Oh my God, man, I'm so excited. And I go, and then it's the same thing. In my email, I get our orders. So I got literally like, and I'm pretty sure we were the highest rated comic out of all the comics on the thing. I could be wrong. I'm probably exaggerating for dramatic effect. And so I get there and I look at my phone and I hope I actually probably didn't because I think it might have been before you had email on your phone. But let's pretend I had a BlackBerry and I pushed the button on the BlackBerry. Our orders were 900 copies.
Yeah.
And you're like, what am I doing? What is this? Like, how am I doing work that a national magazine praises, that not just a national magazine, like one of the highest circulated national magazines, but nobody gives a shit.
Dude, that's what I was saying. Like, the movie, like, that's exactly my point, though. Like, the movies don't really do much for us on the sales side either, you know? It's just like, I don't know. You got to get people into comics. I think digital is the gateway to do it, if done right, like we were saying. So, I don't know, man. I don't want you going anywhere, though. I want you sticking around. I love your stuff.
Oh, I appreciate it. Let's talk more about me and have me less angry shouting.
Well, yeah, man. I mean, anything else you want to say on your stuff upcoming?
Well, I got the Echoes. The hardcover of Echoes will be out in a couple, like 5-6 weeks, I think it comes out. Like, it comes out, I know it comes out before Comic-Con, like right before Comic-Con, I believe. That's going to have, I'm going to make Philip mad and say that I think it might have the entire, all of the scripts in the back. I think it's going to be both the full comic and a script book.
Awesome.
I'm not sure. We need to figure out if we can actually fit it all in. But that last I heard, that's what we were trying for. So it's going to have that. It's going to have, it's going to have a new essay by me. It's going to have concept work from Rasan, and it'll be beautiful. It's going to match Tumor. It's going to be designed out the wazoo. It will be awesome. So please pre-order that if you haven't, and get it on go to your local comic shop from Top Cow, Image, Minotaur, and other things. Don't listen. Amazon also has it for sale.
Don't listen. Daniel, edit that part out.
But just in case there's no comic shops nearby, there's also many fine online retailers who have it. What else do I have? So I got that stuff. That's about it. That's really all that's super close upcoming. And I got more stuff, but like I said, you're like 3 weeks too early for me to talk about any of it.
Yeah, well, it happens. We'll bring it back.
But, there you go. So, 2 weeks. You can have me on every 3 weeks to shout at people. What we could do is you could get various people who could possibly hire me or sue me, put them on the phone with me, and have me say inappropriate things to them.
Dude, I think that will up the hits on our site. Yeah, we're gonna do that.
We're so good.
That's what I do.
Great call, Joshua Felkov.
So, will we see you later today, or are you not doing it?
Oh, I don't think we're gonna make it. We got I got the baby, and we're having. There's all sorts of health issues in my house right now, so I think we're just gonna we're gonna have a family day, nice quiet family day.
I had one of those yesterday. It was awesome.
Yeah, they're nice, aren't they?
But all right, man. Well, hey, dude. Thanks so much for coming on. It was great talking to you.
Thank you, guys, and everybody can come. I have a web. My website is www. See, it's really hard because it's my last name. TheFialkov.com. Or follow me on Twitter at Josh Fialkov. Word. Word up. Thanks for having me, guys.
Why don't you spell your last name for us?
Oh God. So my website is www.thefilkov.com.
How's that? I'm glad you spelled the, just in case, you know.
Well, look, I don't want people to be confused. I want them to go to fialkov.com and then it's some other guy. And they're like, this guy sucks. I thought this guy was fucking the Fialkov, and he's not. He's just a Fialkov. This is bullshit.
All right, man. Well, I think that's a good way to end it.
All right, guys. Take care. Right.
See you, Josh.
Have me.
Bye. Bye. Okay, so that wraps up this week's episode of the Comics Dispatch. You can catch us every Tuesday. We have new stuff. Also, check out our other podcasts of ComicAttack.net Radio, like Tales from the Water Cooler, that's our review show, and then Deep Discussions with Decapitated Dan, where he interviews creators kind of like we just did, but, you know, different. Every week we have a new special guest on here at the Dispatch. Next week, if all goes according to plan, we're going to have on some of the big names from the X-Men cartoon from the 90s. I shit you not. But I don't want to get your hopes up just in case that falls through, but somebody will be on. I can tell you that much. But it should be them, hopefully.
We should get Dan on here.
We should get Dan on here?
Yeah, we should.
Dan who? Decapitated Dan?
Decapitated Dan.
Oh, Decapitated Dan. He's just going to tell us how much he hates everything.
Exactly. He brings an introspective to it.
He does. All right. So, yeah, check us out. If you have any emails or questions or comments or whatever, you can hit us up at andy@comicattack.net.
And daniel@comicattack.net.
So thanks for tuning in, guys. You can like us on Facebook, all that other stuff. All right, enough PR. We will see you next week.
Later.